My guest, Austin McWilliams, is here. We're going to be talking about music in just a minute, but Austin, how did you even make it to the radio station today?
Well, I'm lucky because I live on campus, so I didn't have to drive. I just waded my way here through the snow halfway up to my knees.
Yes, I made it to the Miller structure, and after that, it was like I was in the Arctic, you know. I had snow blindness just in that short distance.
That's right. Well, anything for public radio, Kara.
That's right. The show must go on.
That's right.
WMUK is considered an essential service. Aren't we lucky?
Thank goodness.
Well, I'm so glad that you're here because it gives you, a young conductor, an opportunity to preview something important to you, but also important to many vocal students at Western Michigan University. We're here to talk about this weekend's performances of the Western Michigan University School of Music opera productions. And I say productions because you're getting two for the price of one.
That's right. Two one-acts.
Two one-act operas. Why don't you, I'll let you introduce the pieces.
Sure. So the first piece is called L'Heure Espagnole, or The Spanish Hour. It's by Maurice Ravel, and it's about an hour long, hence the name, The Spanish Hour. And it's a really, shall I say, sensual story. I'm not going to pretend like it's anything less than PG-13. There, it takes place in Spain, and we're performing it in English instead of in the original French. But there is a woman named Concepcion and her husband, Torquemada, who is a clockmaker. And they live in this big house with lots of clocks around. And his job is to also manage the clocks of the town that they live in. So one day he realizes that he needs to go and do that. That leaves his wife alone at home. And while his wife is alone at home, let's say a few suitors come and try to woo her into the bedroom. So we see over the course of the hour, these three men essentially try to win Concepcion over. One of them eventually does. And then by the end of the opera, all of these men are there. Torquemada, the husband, comes back and sees, wow, how wonderful it is that my clock shop is full of all these people to buy my clocks.
Customers.
Customers, exactly. And then all of these men are forced to buy his clocks, and that's the end of the opera.
That's very amusing, charming, kind of French.
Very French.
Called the Spanish Hour.
Yes.
Ravel himself, his mother was Spanish, wasn't she? I think she...
Is that right? I'm actually not sure.
Yeah, I think he came from... He had legitimately... blood in his veins from both countries, and did a few other works that touched on Spanish themes as well in his composing career.
So. It just makes everything feel all the more authentic.
Speaking of his composing career, I don't know this piece at all, and why is that?
You know, it's not a common opera. In fact, there are very few recordings of it that even exist. I think one of the reasons is because it is so stinking hard. There's a time signature change or a tempo change almost every measure for the entire hour of the opera. So it's a real challenge to conduct, but even more than that, it's a real challenge for the singers. I wouldn't call it atonal. It certainly has a tonal framework, but there are portions of it where, let's just say, pitches are less than easy to find, and when there are only five characters, as there are in this opera for the entire hour, the burden is placed on these singers to learn so many pitches and so many rhythms, and it's very difficult. So I think that's one reason why there aren't too many productions of this.
He did write a full-length opera.
Yes.
It's L'Enfant des Sortilèges or something.
Mm-hmm.
It has a child's theme. This one is a more, you know, like a farce. Or
it is. It's an absolute farce.
Like an I Love Lucy episode or
That's
something.
That's right. By the end of it, you should be wondering, what in the world did I just watch?
Does this one-hour act, a single-act opera, come first on the program this
it
Friday
does.
And Saturday?
It will be first.
Excuse me, Saturday and Sunday.
That's right. Saturday and Sunday. This will be first, and it'll be followed by Puccini's Suor Angelica. So this piece is one of three in Puccini's Il Trittico, which was just performed at the Met, actually, I believe a couple months ago, all three of them were. So this is one of those. They can be performed independently. The storylines aren't necessarily interacting at all. But this takes place in a convent in Italy. So nearly all the characters that you'll see are nuns. We see the daily happenings of the convent. But there's one sister who seems to stand out more than the rest, and her name is Angelica, or Suor Angelica. Suor just meaning sister in Italian. And we see that she has desires, which is very forbidden as a nun in the Catholic Church. And we learn that those desires are to see her family and friends. We slowly learn that she actually hasn't seen them in 7 years when she was banished by her family, which is actually a noble royal family. She was banished by them to be in this convent. She hasn't seen them all this time. Well, about midway through the opera, her aunt shows up, her aunt the princess, to deliver some heartbreaking news that's going to drive the rest of the plot. And this one is it's almost a tragedy until the very final seconds. And I think I'll just leave it there.
Puccini, of course, wrote a lot of famous operas. And Il Trittico, as you said, it comes back again and again, and even the Met brings back Il Trittico. You have conducted operas before, or no?
Good question. No, these are the first operas I've ever conducted.
Wow. Tell us a little more about yourself. I think we'd want to refresh listeners, because you were here when the University Symphony Orchestra had a student conductor showcase.
That's correct.
And you featured one piece on that program. But
right, that was Verdi. I just can't get away from my romantic Italians, I guess.
Well, would you remind us again a little about your background and how you got into conducting?
Sure. So I came here from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. I studied computer engineering there, and I just really liked music and was involved in the School of Music there, and I decided to apply for Masters of Music programs. So I ended up getting into this wonderful place where I study with Dr. Kimberly Dunn Adams. My major is officially choral conducting here. I think it was not until last October that I even interacted with Dr. Carl Ratner for the first time, who wasn't able to make it this morning. He snowed in.
Sorry, Carl.
Sorry, Dr. Ratner.
We'd love to have you here. But yeah, those snowdrifts are nothing to take for granted.
No, absolutely not. But Dr. Ratner, I ended up interacting with him and just offhand asking him who's directing the operas this fall. And it turned out they were still searching for directors and that they were actually pushing the operas back until February. So it sort of allowed me to step in last minute and get some new experience for me. And, you know, I've never conducted operas before, so this has been really exciting start to finish.
Oh my gosh, Austin. I mean, this is going to be quite the crucible for a young conductor. There are so many mistakes you can make. I mean, first of all, what do you pay attention to?
The answer to that is everything at once.
Yeah.
Well, it is a bit tricky because you have to concentrate for essentially 2 hours in a row without making any mistakes, or at least my mistakes aren't audible. So I can cover myself a little bit that
they
way.
They will be if you cue the wrong person.
That's right. You're not wrong. No, but who do I concentrate on? Well, that's a good question, because we actually have a bit of a thicker orchestration this year than I think people who have been to the operas here the past few years might be used to. I know recently we've been doing things with only piano, just playing the orchestral reduction. But this year we have something just a bit more interesting, I think. We have piano plus harp plus percussion plus a couple other instruments here and there as needed. I just really wanted to take advantage of these lush orchestrations that Puccini and Ravel have to offer for us, and thought that it would be interesting to use some more color than a piano could offer alone.
The harp sounds enchanting. Is there a School of Music harpist?
There is no School of Music harpist, in fact, but Allison Reese, who's based in Zeeland, Michigan, she'll be our harpist, and many of you have probably seen her play with USO or other community organizations here and in southwestern Michigan before.
Well, she'll be very much a featured player, I guess.
She absolutely will be, and she's really stunning.
So let's get back to the Ravel, and also remind listeners that the performances are Saturday 7 p.m. and Sunday 5 p.m. Dalton Center Recital Hall. Tickets are available at the door or in advance through the Miller Auditorium box office, milleraudatorium.com, on a day like this. Austin, let's talk about the Revel. Again, I think I counted four men and one wife.
That's correct. Four men and one wife. Wife would be the key word. You're right.
Okay. The casting, what part of the student body are you drawing from? Are they upper graduate, freshmen, sophomore level?
Certainly all music majors. And they are, well, for the Revel, because it's so difficult, we're utilizing most of our grad students for this opera. And then also upper level undergraduates, particularly those whose musicianship is really, really strong and can take on something like this.
Really solid, yeah.
Yes. And then the Puccini is filled with equally talented singers. Largely, I would say, freshmen through juniors, and then a few seniors and graduate students as well. And the opera chorus, in particular for the Puccini, is just absolutely stunning at this point.
Oh, terrific. Tell me a little about what we're going to hear in the Revel in terms of his musical language and how he puts sounds and voices together.
It's quite interesting what he's done. He uses many Spanish motives throughout the opera. And one of the interesting things that he does is assign each of these five characters their own motive. And you can hear them nearly always in some part of the texture while the characters are singing. But the really fun parts are when you have more than one character on stage at once, because he uses these motives so creatively and intricately interweaves them so that you can almost hear what's happening in the dialogue through the interaction of the motives and the orchestration.
Wow. Okay. Well, you've set that up very nicely. We have centered in on a highly complicated part of the opera. So where are we in scene 13, roughly? I know there's at least three people involved.
Sure, sure. Well, here we are at scene 13. Ravel has divided this approximately hour-long opera into 21 scenes plus an introduction. So each of them lasts only a couple minutes, and each one is more dense than the last. But here we find ourselves in the middle, where Concepcion has all of these men in the house right now, all three of them, with the exception of her husband, of course. And she's trying to manage their presences without anyone knowing that the other's there. So one of them, the noble banker, Don Inigo Gomez, is actually hiding in one of the clocks while one of the other men is in the room. So we're going to hear Concepcion, the woman, speaking with Ramiro, who is a muleteer, moving clocks back and forth for her, while Don Inigo Gomez is actually singing from inside a clock as an aside to the audience.
Voilà l'objet. Que faut-il que j'en fasse?
Ah, l'horloge! C'est bon, merci. Mettez ça là.
Et maintenant, c'est celle-là que dans votre chambre l'on place.
Dans ma chambre?
Ah, vous tous, vous n'avez qu'un mot à dire et je l'enlève.
Demeurez donc, si bon vous semble. Mais n'attendez pas, s'il vous plaît, que j'écoute encore les couplets de la romance qui recommence. Vous avez de l'esprit, mais manquez d'à propos. J'en ai assez de vos pipeaux.
We are just listening to some beautiful music by Maurice Ravel. It's like discovering a whole new work if you're not familiar with this short opera, L'Heure Espagnole, or The Spanish Hour. My guest is Austin McWilliams, who has taken on the task of conducting two one acts this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, Saturday at 7 and Sunday at 5 p.m., working with the cast, preparing the orchestra, such as it is. It's a lovely trio.
Yes.
Piano, harp, percussion, and auxiliary players as needed.
That's correct.
And how do you even take classes and do the rest of your work when you're preparing an opera?
I think the answer right now is I don't.
You're really focused on
I'm quite focused on the operas, yes.
Yeah.
But I'm also lucky because I put off, or rather I've done most of my coursework at this point in my master's. I graduate this April, and so my course load this semester is quite low, which allowed me to take on something like this.
You know, you brought in the scores with you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you carry them other places than to interviews?
I carry them just about everywhere right now, Kara.
So when you open up a score and see black and white notes on a page now, do you hear things? Does it become much more than just black and white notes?
Sure. I mean, it's impossible not to hear things, especially with the way that Ravel utilizes texture, I think, more than anything else in this opera. It's just, it's so incredible. And I really wanted to not lose much of that texture simply because we're performing this with a little chamber ensemble, as it were, and not a full orchestra. And so I've gone through various scenes in this and sort of reorchestrated them to divide parts among the players that we do have so as to really get a more full experience of, I think, what Ravel would have wanted with the number of players we have available.
How much preparation did you expect from the cast? What's sort of the minimum to get started on a good rehearsal process?
Oh, wow. What a good question. You know, it's so difficult in this opera in particular because, as I said, there's a time signature change or a meter change nearly every measure. And if you're a singer in this, it's almost impossible to practice. And if you're a pianist in this who's coaching one of the singers, how in the world do you know how to coach them at all these tempo changes and time signature changes? So it really just has to come from the top down at every single level. So back in October, there we were, every single rehearsal, just speaking the text in rhythm over and over again until we were actually on the same page about how it goes. At which point, we start adding in pitches gradually, and we work our way up from there.
Listeners, are you hearing this? This incredible detailed work that's resulting in just two performances. Your chances to see these operas are Saturday and Sunday at 7 p.m. and 5 p.m. in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. I'm not worthy. It is really such dedication and love of music and an opportunity, I think, for each person with a role to inhabit a role at this time in a young performer's life. Each role is new,
mm-hmm.
and each opportunity builds on the one that just came. Yeah,
that's right. And I've no doubt that this, the Ravel in particular, is the hardest thing that virtually all of our singers have ever done musically. And I'm just so incredibly proud of them for stepping up to the task and doing this. And they are doing it very well.
A completely different cast will take on the roles of Suor Angelica.
That's correct.
Let's transition to this piece, this story. Although you did say you wanted to leave some of it in the dark.
That's right. I can't give away the ending. No one Google it.
I like how in the first in the Ravel you have four men and a leading a prima donna, and here it's almost exactly reversed. Is there a male role at all?
There's not a male role at all. We do have one countertenor who's singing as a nun, but no male role, per se. However, I will say this, in the finale, the chorus finale, Puccini actually did score it for a chorus of sopranos and tenors and basses, the only time that any male voices are heard in this entire opera. And I think he did that because this opera is part of Il Trittico, and when it would have originally been performed, all three of them would have been performed in succession, so those tenors and basses would have been sitting around. You might as well throw them in for the finale.
You may as well. Puccini's stories in his other operas are often very human, lots of love triangles and torrid passions. This has a sacred angle to it, an angle of grace.
Absolutely.
To it. Is that a little different for Puccini, do you think?
I think so. So much of his music is so whimsical and I think more inwardly focused. And this is really much more magnanimous in terms of its ambiance and just the way that the characters interact and what drives their role throughout the course of the opera.
You've mentioned Sister Angelica.
That's right.
Who has a mysterious past and maybe shouldn't be in a convent at all, but part of a noble family.
That's correct.
But but for some reason she's here at this convent. Often, you know, convents are led by strong mother women. Is there a character like that in this?
There is indeed. We have plenty of nuns in charge, shall I say, who are very willing to lay down the law. One of them is the monitor, and actually the opera opens with the monitor punishing nuns for either showing up late to chapel or doing mischievous things in chapel, like laughing or bringing flowers into the chapel. So we just see the inner workings of the convent before the real drama begins.
Did you have to spend hours in rehearsal talking, or as you mentioned with the Ravel, you didn't even add pitches until later, or is this a little more singer-friendly?
This one is considerably more singer-friendly, that's for sure. We were able to, dare I say it, speak and sing at the same time.
Are they both in English?
They're both in English. Well, one is originally in Italian, of course, the Puccini, and the Ravel originally in French with a few Spanish words thrown in there, but we're performing them both in English.
So no subtitles needed.
No subtitles needed. Just sit back and enjoy.
Okay. That's at 7 o'clock on Saturday and 5 o'clock this coming Sunday, and we're assuming the weather will have calmed down plenty.
Please, we've already lost so many rehearsal hours to the snow, so the fact that this is even going to happen this weekend is a miracle and a testament to the students' hard work.
Oh, yeah. They must do a lot on their own.
They do.
Are recordings terribly helpful, or at some point do you have to sort of tear yourself away from learning a version that doesn't necessarily have to do with what's happening right now?
That's exactly right. You know, recordings are useful up to a point, but at a certain point, you have to find out what your artistic vision is for what your role is going to be, whether you're a conductor or instrumentalist or singer. And so while it can be helpful in terms of, you know, having maybe a track to learn pitches to, if that's how you like to learn pitches as a singer, it's much more useful at the beginning than it is at the end, when you really need to take artistic ownership of the role.
We are running out of time, Austin, because I do have another interview to share with listeners. Now, I have a puzzled look on my face because I'm thinking campus is closed. I wonder if tonight's concert will be going on at all. But I better do my second guest the honor of sharing it with listeners. Did you know there was a sitar player coming to campus today?
I did. I had seen the Facebook event, although I'm admittedly not convinced that the concert's going to happen
tonight.
That's
right. Well, just in case, I will have to give Arjun Verma some time this hour.
Please do.
Just in case he's here, because he has a lot of fascinating things to say about his tradition of Indian classical music. Austin, after you graduate, will we see you around here? Are you headed off to the next big, bright thing?
I will be headed off to wherever that job is. So if that job is around here, I'll be seeing you next year again, Kara.
Good. All right. It's been really fun to talk to you this morning. Thank you so much for plowing through those snowdrifts to
get here. Of course. Thanks for having me. The show must go on.
How about a highlight from Puccini's Sor Angelica? What should we listen to?
Well, next we're going to listen to the famous aria from Sor Angelica. It's called Senza Mamma, which just means without mama. And we're going to hear Sor Angelica herself singing about her child and the loss of her child.